What's up, guys? Welcome to the Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting, the podcast all about the average flawed dad learning to be a better parent. Today, we're lucky enough to be talking to Alston Wongus, a fellow podcaster and father. Alston co-hosts the podcast Dad and Well Black. He wanted to create a space for Black fathers, a place where they can share experiences, seek advice, and just feel like somebody understood what it means to be a Black father in America. Stick around and listen as a couple flawed dads figure out how not to screw up your kids too bad. Hey, Alston, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, pretty good.
Trucking along. It's a Saturday, so, you know, rest and recuperation.
Yeah, just getting ready for all of the chaos of the week to start all over again.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about, why don't we start off, tell us a little bit about your family.
Okay. So just a little about me. I'm 31. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I have a 2-year-old and I am married. Been married now for, it would be 5 years this year.
Congratulations.
thank you. So pretty much, I guess, your typical family dynamic, so to speak. So my wife is 33. She'll be 34 this year.
Older woman. Nice. I went older as well. Also, yeah. I think that's the smart thing to do.
It
is. Yeah. Is she from Maryland as well?
She's actually from Washington, D.C., so not too far off. But yeah, she's from D.C., which we kind of have like a D.C. Baltimore rival thing here. So we kind of joke about that pretty often.
Like Ravens versus the Washington football team?
Right, exactly.
Are you going to be watching tomorrow for the Super Bowl?
Probably not. No. I'll probably chime in every so often. I'm more of a basketball fan than a football fan, okay. So that's okay. My lane.
Right on.
And probably with my son running around, I probably won't get a chance to watch anything anyway.
and so that's
natural.
Yeah, yeah. And so your son is he's 2 now?
Yes. Yep. He's 2.
How are the terrible 2s treating you?
they're treating me.
We have
some good days and we have some days where I kind of want to rip my hair out, but you know, we get through it. And I think what I'm trying to learn is how to teach him to manage his emotions. Mm. And that's something that I haven't all the way figured out myself yet. So
none of us have.
No, I think that's a constant topic on this podcast is the idea of controlling emotions.
Yeah, and we're vastly older than you by, 7 years or so.
5 years?
Yeah. So we have, you know, a huge amount of
life experience.
That
yeah. I would tell you that it gets easier to manage the emotions. It does not. No matter.
Because they're always changing and always things they don't want now they want, and things they didn't want before. It's just a lot. But
So unfortunately, if you're coming here for a pep talk, you're not getting it. it's not what you're selling.
So 2 years old. So you got preschool and stuff coming up in the next year and a bit. Are you looking forward to that, or are you guys gonna keep them home?
So I'm going to try to keep them home as long as I can. Both me and my wife are kind of like, so the daycare thing alone was hard. Especially because he had to go so young. He started daycare at 3 months.
Okay.
So that was difficult. So I'm not even looking forward to introducing him into a school setting where he's with a bunch more kids and other adults. I've gotten used to daycare situation. I love his daycare provider. She's really awesome. As far as like, you know, teaching them and taking good care of them. And there's only 8 kids there. So he's not overwhelmed with, you know, they all get special attention at some point. So yeah. I know going into the school realm is a lot different. And just a lot of things happen with schools that kind of make me nervous about that too. So,
right.
But you know, I cross that bridge when I get to it.
Yeah.
So if you could walk me through, so we're in a different country. our setup is maybe a little different. The 3 months you said daycare, was that's because of career sort of?
Or just the limits on maternity leave in the States.
Yeah. What was that?
Oddly enough, my job actually has better parental benefits for fathers than my wife's job did for mothers. Mm. So I was able to take off a total of almost 4 months.
Okay.
And my wife actually ended up having to go back to work before me. So I was actually home. It was just me and my son for about, I want to say about a week after, and then I, you know, transitioned back into work as well. But yeah, it was just the parental leave exhausted on both ends. Had it been up to me, I would have, you know, tried to keep him home a lot longer, because 3 months is kind of, it was a little scary, but we got through it.
Yeah. It's a weird, the reason why I prod for that is that from our world, I don't know whether you know what the landscape is up in Canada, but for the most part, people get at least 12 months of leave. Like, it's a whole year. And that's so crazy. You know, from us, I know it exists in the United States, that there's sort of that shorter parental leave stuff. And to me, it's just baffling to how the complexity involved with that. So, I mean, parenting is hard enough as is, and to have, you know, a mother, you know, cause the mother's obviously dealing with breastfeeding and other parts, and to separate child, I don't know, was that hard? Did you feel like overall?
Yeah, it was difficult. I will say the one thing that I was concerned about is my wife had a C-section, you know, that obviously takes longer to heal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they give, you know, they say 6 weeks, but it took so much longer than that, just as far as her getting back to normal, getting back to feeling like herself. Mm-hmm. So what I tried to do was kind of take that load off of her. So I had the baby a lot. Within that first, you know, 2 to 3 months, just in an attempt to make her not have to move too much, you know, because getting in and out of bed was difficult for her. So
I bet.
So I tried to step in where I could, but also make sure that they still had their you know, bonding time as well.
Get in on the diapers. Is that your job?
Yeah, that was a big thing. So before, funny story, before my son was born, I said, you know, well, I don't sleep at night. I'm usually up.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, well, I agreed to take the night shift well before my son got here, not knowing what I was getting myself into in that moment. So when he got here, it was just, he had a small case of colic as well. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. And he, even now, if he goes to bed before 9 o'clock, he's not sleeping through the night. And I find that, you know, my mom always says, well, you know, it's because you didn't sleep train him, right? And I'm like, no, I've let him go to bed at 8 o'clock and he wakes up at 2, like it's party time. So I had to learn to kind of step away from people's opinions and do what works for us. Because usually he's in bed 9:30 and now he sleeps through the night.
That's a hard thing to do as a parent, because everybody wants to give you their opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've got opinions. If you want opinions, we got opinions. We got lots of them.
None of them are right, but we've got them nonetheless. So
I will probably give a couple opinions. I cannot help it.
Yeah.
I mean, to your point though, it's good to be receptive, I would think, to at least the points, but then also like, listen, you know,
dismissive.
I'll take it, but maybe it won't work for us. I'll try it.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, then, you know, I gotta find my own path as well.
Yeah. I always tell people, I'll listen. I'll definitely hear you out. I don't know if I'm going to apply what you're telling me, but I'll hear you out.
We did an episode on why most parenting advice is wrong.
Yeah.
So there's a TED talk by a lady named Yuko Munakata. And
we're getting way better at that.
I am getting way better at that name.
We say that name all the time now.
So dialed in. So she talks about this idea that most parenting advice, because it's generalized, doesn't work for kids, because every single kid requires a different methodology for parenting.
Yeah.
And so even when we treat our own kids the same, there's inherent flaws in that, because each child needs to be parented differently.
Different experiences,
they're genetically
hierarchy
different
of whatever,
right? Different chemicals, makeup of their brain, all of that.
Sex, right? Male, female, like the enemies.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So you're doing the right thing, you know.
So what?
Try it.
But what made you decide to have kids?
So I always tell this story and I always get laughed at, but so I,
we're already laughing.
So growing up, you know, when most kids, they say like, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, et cetera. I just wanted to be a dad. And that literally was just, I liked at the time, at that age, cause it kind of changed, but at the time of the age, I liked the relationship that I had with my dad. Mm-hmm. I just liked that. Like he was just cool to me, you know? Everything he did was cool. He could do no wrong in my eyes at that age. And I kind of said, you know, it probably feel good to be on the other side of that, for somebody to feel like that about me. And I don't know why I was thinking about that at 7, 8 years old, but
long-term thinker.
Yeah. So, and when I met my wife out, you know, one thing that we discussed was if children were a tiebreaker. And at the time, before we even started dating, we were friends, and, you know, she would say that she didn't want kids. So it kind of, I was just like, well, that's not going to work. We're going to, you know, we're going to move forward in this. Mm-hmm. But when we decided to start dating, we agreed, you know, if we do get married, then of course he would have kids at that time. Initially, crazily enough, I wanted 4 kids. So we couldn't agree on that. So we met in the middle at 2, which is why, again, we're
start high.
That's a good move. Yeah, negotiate. Right.
You should have started at 6.
Yeah.
Could have gotten 3.
So we agreed at 2. And knowing what I know now, I don't think that 4 would be feasible for me.
And now that she has kids, does she still want them, or does she go back to the idea of not wanting them?
No, she's head over heels for my son. Okay. That kind of went out the window even when we were dating, when we just kind of have talks of, you know, when we have kids, we're going to do this and that. Right. So that kind of went right out the window as soon as we started dating. And I guess because we talked about it being a deal breaker prior to that, it was an easy, it's easy transition into moving forward with that.
Well, and I mean, you said you were 31, for someone that has wanted kids since 7, you know, you waited that long game.
Yeah.
You know, 24 years.
Yeah. That's a lot of patience.
Kudos. Kudos. You hit, like, you could have hit that on the park, you know, 13, 14, if you wanted to, I suppose, but hey, right. You waited it out.
That's good.
I lived with a mom who, was not letting me bring no babies in the house. So, and I didn't move out until I was 23.
Yeah.
Moved out at 23. We got married when I was 26.
And then, so you even waited after you got married for a little while.
Well, you said married for 5 years, right?
We waited a little bit because we reached a point where we thought we couldn't have kids. So that was kind of nerve-wracking. So we had, you know, started looking at other options that were available. Mm-hmm. And then found out she was pregnant. So
that's awesome.
Actually, it was around this time when we found out, because we were away for Valentine's Day.
Okay.
And she kept saying she didn't feel well. And I'm like, okay, well, when we get back in town, we'll, you know, go to the doctor. Yeah. She was like, no, something feels different. I'm like, okay. So she took at the time we were testing for ovulation, you know, because we were trying.
Yeah.
And the ovulation test came back extremely dark. Mm-hmm. Which was odd because that had never happened before.
Right. Yeah.
So she was like, I'm going to take a pregnancy test just to see. And lo and behold,
that's the best. You know, from my perspective, so we had our first daughter pretty darn easily. You know, there was, okay, let's have kids. And we are having a child like within the next month type stuff. It was, you know,
right.
Plan to action, you know, right away, fortunately. and happy, healthy child, and everything's good. So then the second one was not as easy. And that's the part that I can somewhat empathize. You know, we had a few miscarriages, one pretty bad miscarriage in the fact that she ended up losing a lot of blood and had to get blood transfusion. Mm-hmm. So the process to have the second one, see, like, it was, you know, I've sort of covered both. Like, one, you're like, well, this kid making thing is easy, like, you know, just okay, you know, want a child, like, boom, there we go. But it's sometimes not that easy. And
but the practice was a lot of fun.
Well, yes, yeah. Mostly, yeah. mostly, except to the point where it is. Except if you're really trying for that goal,
right.
I can empathize. Yeah. Like, I don't know what it's like for you.
And you're hanging them upside down. Yeah. And, yeah,
you know, like if you're really trying and you're not able to, it starts to get a little bit more commoditized. The fact that, like, okay, well, I have to track this. Okay, well, this is the time now, and like it becomes more almost regimented, and that kind of loses the fun. You know, of course.
Yeah,
tracking it kind of took a little bit of the fun out of it, because it was like, you got to do it at this time, at this certain temperature.
You're on the clock. It's time to go.
So that was tough. And then we had so the month prior to her finding out she was pregnant. We thought she was pregnant, but she ended up not being pregnant. So that was kind of heartbreaking. And then once kind of moved through that, that very next month. So I guess it's just a matter of, you know, it's when it's your time, which is hard to hear, but you know, and then we're so young. So it was kind of, it was scary.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've since then, you know, both of us have been checked out, doctors cleared both of us. So it's just a matter of timing, I guess.
Yeah.
So they never were able to find like an underlying issue as to why it took so long. It's just a matter of, everything happens when it's
just wasn't right at the time. Yeah. So
tell me, is there something that with your vast 2 years of experience so far, something as a father that you wish you had known before you started to become a father? Like, hey, someone with all the tidbits and knowledge that you were given, warranted or not, you know, what would you tell your past self? It's a good question. You have to think about it.
Funny enough, the first thing that comes to mind is that potty training is not easy. we're going through that now, and it's just like, for us, it's simple because we're programmed to know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, when you got to go to the bathroom, you get up and go. Yeah. You weren't relying on a diaper for the first 2 years of your life. So
yes.
So that has been tough.
Mm-hmm.
Something small. One thing that I think I guess I would tell myself, knowing what I know now, if I could go back, is just to be patient. I'm not a patient person by far.
Right.
So my son kind of halted me and just kind of pushed me into patience. And sometimes it's not always easy. And he's not a bad kid. He's just super active. He wants what he wants when he wants it.
He's a boy.
And I may have spoiled him just a tad.
I've wanted you since I was 7. You will get everything that you ever need.
I would say that would be a big takeaway for me, just to learn patience, just to be understanding that he has to learn how to manage his emotions, because he's not, you know, he wasn't born with that option. That's something that has to be taught. And being that as adults, we still kind of go through trying to manage that on our own. It's hard to teach that to a kid. So
it's amazing how much you do learn about yourself when you have kids, I find. Either the good or bad, you know. It's like, God damn, it turns out I'm pretty angry.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Like these really, really nasty, you know, subconscious issues that I put on a shelf for a long time. So I wanted to ask, you know, in relation to that, and you talking about things like the stuff you wish you'd known, potty training, that sort of stuff. I'm sure that has an influence on why you started the podcast that you did.
Absolutely. You
know, Dad and Mom Black.
Absolutely.
And obviously Graham and I have a very different experience being two white guys from Canada. So tell me a little bit about why you started the podcast and what you were hoping to accomplish with the podcast.
So I started the podcast just randomly on a whim. So when I found out my wife was pregnant, I had a lot of female friends that have kids. Most of my male friends don't have kids. So I kind of felt like I was alone out here. Just like, I have my uncles that were very instrumental in raising me and, you know, making me the man that I am today, but I didn't have anyone in like my age range. You know, they're old school. So I wanted to create a space, and then not just for young dads, but just dads in general.
Yeah.
I wanted to create a space to kind of allow us to have a safe space, so to speak, where you're not clouded by like your partner's judgment or your, you know, your mother's judgment. So where we can just kind of just be guys and just be dads. And just creating a space for that. So initially it started out as just kind of an Instagram post, honestly. And I'm like, you know, it's just an idea. And I had a friend reach out to me, Justin. We went to high school together, but after he was a grade older than me. So after he graduated, we kind of disconnected. We, you know, we didn't talk. We hadn't seen each other outside of maybe communicating through Facebook. He was the first person to respond. And that's kind of what birthed the podcast there, because we kind of jumped right in. We took about a couple of weeks to get reacclimated, kind of relearn each other again, and then went right into, you know, to launching the podcast. And then since kind of diving into the dad influencer realm, I've decided to take it from a podcast and create a brand behind it as well.
Right.
Just because it is super important, just on the stereotypes that Black dads are presented with, and society's just not always fair, nice to Black Dads as a collective. And I thought it was important to showcase that, you know, we do have present fathers in the Black community, and that we, you know, we're here. We're very much here. And we're not, you know, we're not all deadbeats, and we're not all living to what society thinks that we should be living to. And that's where, so that's kind of why I separated the podcast page from my personal page, because I wanted to be able to highlight just different Black dads just doing different things.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just to kind of showcase, like, we're definitely here, present. And I do believe with the climate right now is changing in that realm.
Yep.
And that's just something I love to see. So, that's my long-term goal is to really get into some advocacy work. For dads that maybe not aren't able to see their kids due to court reason or legal reasons, and things like that. So don't want to be a full-on attorney or lawyer, but just want to educate myself on that so I can either give, you know, correct information or at least point that particular person in the right direction.
That's a great goal.
And so obviously you and I met through this dad influencer group. Maybe, you know, take a couple of seconds to talk about what the dad influencer group has meant to you and you know, how you got involved with it, that sort of thing.
Okay. So I got involved with it roughly about 4 weeks ago now. So I had seen everyone talking about this Clubhouse app, and I'm just like, another social media that I don't need. I have a hard enough time trying to manage, you know, 2 Instagram pages and a Facebook, Facebook page, and just life in general. So I'm like, it's not so. I kind of put it on the background. And I was on Twitter one day, and I saw the dad influencer hashtag with, you know, the conversation where they had started the group, and I said, at the time I didn't have a Clubhouse invite, so I missed it. So I kind of ranted about that on Twitter, and one of my good friends, Reagan, she invited me to Clubhouse, and that's kind of how I was able to jump on that very next call the next week, and I kind of just been sticking with it ever since. And so I didn't set out to be a dad influencer, so to speak. But it kind of it's like once I got into that group and just the knowledge that they share and just kind of putting that into practice on my pages, opportunities have just kind of been flying in. Left and right without, I haven't even done, for me personally, in my mind, I haven't even done all of the work yet. But the opportunities have kind of just been coming in. Definitely a great group. And I think I finally feel in a place where I've found my dad tribe, as they like to call it. Because, you know, we talk about Instagram stuff, but we also talk about real life situations and about our kids and things like that. So definitely something I feel that was needed for me personally to better myself as a dad and just to have that community around me as well.
Nice. Now, you touched on, I'm sort of backtracking a little bit from the back to the parenting side for your experience right now. Big part is you mentioned about the terrible twos. And from what you were saying off sort of camera, it was that the terrible twos started the terrible ones.
They started very early.
So, you know, now that you've had basically a whole year of it almost, do you have any skills or things that you learned during that process to maybe mitigate some of that issue?
So for me, it's just been really trying to control my emotions while he's upset.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I find, obviously, we're both upset. We're not going to get anywhere. Me telling you not to cry is not going to make you stop crying.
Damn it, it doesn't work. Shit, I've been trying that for years.
So my mom would always say, you know, just leave him where he's at. Don't pay him any mind. He'll stop. And he's just not that kid. He's just going to keep going and going and going until he either gets what he wants or somebody gives him, you know, a little bit of love. So what I've started doing recently is kind of just, so when he liked that, just kind of have him look at me and just, you know, I'll say, look at daddy, lost my train of thought. So I'll say, you know, look at daddy, and I'll say, calm down, stop crying. I'll have him repeat, you know, I'll have him say, well, I'm strong, and I'll say, no crying. He'll say, no crying, then I'll stop.
Yeah.
And I found that has worked in most cases, unless he's really upset about something or he's really sleepy. At that point,
That's game over.
Hungry, sleepy.
Animal brain takes over and away it goes. You know, if I could high horse from the stuff that I've read and have worked very well. So I've tried this twice now because I have two kids. My second one just turned two in October. So maybe close to the same type of age range. The choices, giving them choices, is like hands down the best thing I have ever done. My mother told me that a long time ago, and I've done it. So I don't know whether you know what I'm talking about here, but it's basically, if you want them to put their pants on, right? Mm-hmm. Then you give them, and they don't want to put their pants on. You get, like, there's no way they want to run around. Like, there's no chance that they want to do any of that, right?
Right.
Giving them a choice. Okay, what type of pants do you want to wear? Do you want to wear the blue pants with the race cars, or do you want to wear the red pants with whatever it is? And then they usually often will choose. And then if that's annoying, and then they're like, I don't want to put my pants on still, even though I made that choice, then you go to the next choice. Okay, well, which leg do you want to put on first? You want to put your right leg, or you want to put your left leg? And then they choose, and you do that. And you just keep going down the line of all these different choices, and you can make a choice out of almost anything. And that's hands down, at least for my experience with my two daughters, keep in mind. So maybe there's a difference there, or, you know, whatever, but.
Well, given that your two-year-old.
Hands down is awesome.
Given that your two-year-old is essentially a nudist, you know, this has got to be a challenging thing in your house. Yeah. I know, so, every time I come over to your house, she's running around without pants on. So,
so coincidentally, why would I think of the pants topic? Well, probably because I've done that enough times now that it works. I like 100% of the time for me. It is fantastic. And given them that choice. And then the second one is from what I read about just being angry and acknowledging why they're angry. Or sad or whatever it is. Oh, so my daughter's name is Kendra. Kendra's sad. She got her toy or milk dropped down. Like, yeah, that's sad. And acknowledging it is almost like enough that they can like, okay, well, now I get why you understand why I'm pissed off. So
right,
I guess I can move on. It seems to drop that down a lot more.
So
he's definitely a choice kid. So like even with dinner, I'm like, what do you want? You want burger? Do you want chicken? And he'll usually decide. Sometimes he'll decide and then change his mind after
he's already 100%.
Made his mind.
Yeah.
So doing that, but I do find that giving him options, and it's funny because growing up, I used to always say, you don't give kids choices. They do what you tell them to do.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it doesn't, that type of parenting just doesn't work with this new generation of kids. So I try to give him options, at least even as far as like, what color do you want to wear to daycare tomorrow. He'll pick his color. May change his mind by the morning, but at least he's getting in the realm of being able to decide things for himself.
Nice. So you're already in that mode. I just bring it to everything. I mean, because people sort of naturally do it, and yeah, I also don't commit to their answer. No, you chose the red pants. Like, that was your first answer. You don't get the blue now. You don't get to change your mind.
I'm trying to get you to wear pants, but I'm willing to go to battle over this.
That's right.
So in terms of parenting advice, you mentioned that your mom gave you some advice and you had some like really instrumental uncles in your life. Mm-hmm. Who is it you go to now for parenting advice? Like, who do you lean on in your life?
So I'll say this about myself first. I'm the type of person, I don't want advice unless I ask for it.
Okay.
So fair, the unwarranted enough parenting advice, it bothered
I'm glad me. I just told you.
It bothered me bad in the beginning because I just felt like I felt the need to be perfect. And I used to always feel like if you're suggesting something to me, then maybe I'm doing something wrong. So it was a mental thing.
But we are. We're doing it all wrong. Guaranteed. No matter what you think, no matter how great of a parent you think you are doing it all wrong. Inevitably.
All of us are doing something.
And just wait till your kids are my kids' age. They will be very confident in telling you everything you're doing wrong. And it will not stop. So being wrong as a parent is kind of, that's parenting in its essence.
Like,
it's,
but realizing that you are often wrong is also, you know,
It's grounding. Yeah.
I was super hard on myself. I'd say like the first maybe 6 or 7 months of my son being born, like everything I did had to be perfect. Mm. And my wife used to always say, you know, it's okay. You know, we're both learning, you know, right. Obviously we're both going to make mistakes. I just didn't allow myself to make mistakes in my mind.
It's hard.
And I probably made a whole bunch of them, but in my mind, you know, I wanted everything to be perfect. So
yeah,
that's kind of where I fell with that.
Yeah. And so do you have somebody you go to now at all? Or it's like, if you could go to anybody for parenting advice, do you have somebody that you would talk to?
So I talk to my mom still a lot. Cause again, she was instrumental. She raised me. She was a single mother. My dad left when I was 10. So most of my life, she's been there. We're really close. It's like my best friend. So I'll definitely go to her for advice. Sometimes I regret it. not so much because she's giving me wrong information. I just don't always want to hear it at that moment.
Okay.
And she's like, well, you come to me for advice and you don't want to hear what I'm telling you. So which one is it?
Yeah.
No, I just want to hear it when I'm ready to hear it.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Agree with me now. Tell me what I'm supposed to hear later. Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say my mom, and then I talk to Justin a lot just about dad stuff, which again is the co-host on my show. So we talk about everything from mental health as far as ourselves are concerned. So I, even like if I've had a bad dad day, as I call them, where I may have lost my cool or got a little angrier than I should have, you know, I'll typically reach out to him and he'll just kind of reassure me, like, you know, you're doing what you're supposed to do, you're doing a good job, you're going to have bad days. And that for me, I've been a lot more open with having bad days now more that he's older than, you know, when I first became a dad. It's like you learn something new every day, and that is amazing in a sense, but it's also kind of mind wrecking. It's just like, I thought I knew this yesterday, but it's completely different today.
Completely different. Yeah. And you know, the thing that you have to look forward to when your son becomes three, there's like a switch, like a change. They become somewhat more of a rational human being that you can have conversations with. I mean, it's a roller coaster, right? Yeah. Highest highs, lowest lows in your life. But there is a huge change at three in their personality and what you can actually talk to them about, that sort of thing. It's a massive change. So I look forward to seeing that for you.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, but in terms of the bad dad days, I mean, if I called Graham every time I had a bad dad day, I'd be on the phone with him every day. Like constant.
Yeah, we all have moments for sure where we look back. Well, can't go back a dime there, but missed on that for sure. Definitely missed on that.
Yeah. What do you think are the best tips? Like, I know you don't like to get advice, but if you were going to give some other dads advice, like if you were going to say, here's the three things I really think you should be doing as a dad, what do you think they are?
So the main thing I would say is just being involved. Because a lot of times, especially, I don't notice it really with kind of like the 30 and up crew as far as dads, but like the older dads, and even talking to my grandmother from time to time, like my grandfather never changed a diaper a day in his life. And that was odd to me because I'm like, well, I knew my dad changed my diapers when I was young, from what I was told. And I definitely have changed my son's diapers. So it's just being present, just being involved in being partners in your relationship, whether that be a marriage, a boyfriend and girlfriend, or even with co-parenting. Just still making sure that your child feels your presence specifically. And I think that's important, especially, I mean, it's important for both boys and girls for different reasons.
Right.
I always say it's super important for daughters because you're kind of setting the tone of what they think of men as they, you know, when they get older and they grow up. And then also with sons, so he'll know how to treat, you know, and that's a big thing for me too. Just teaching my son how to treat women early on in life. So I have him, like, he holds the door for his mom, you know, please and thank you, those things like that. So I would say definitely being present.
Yeah. That's a chivalrous 2-year-old.
Yeah. That's really good. That's really good.
That's impressive. Kudos to that.
He's a great kid. He takes out, he doesn't do it by himself, but he helps me take out the trash.
Nice.
He puts dishes in the dishwasher, things like that. He feeds the dog. So, things like that. So I'm just trying to teach him somewhat of a responsibility early on in life.
Good for you.
And I think that'll be my third point as well. So just teaching them, just teaching them and also allowing yourself to be teachable.
Yeah.
Because you learn a lot from your kids, and I've learned that over the last 2 years. So I can only imagine, 10, 15 years down the road, what else I can say that I've learned from him directly. And he showed me, I always tell him, even though he doesn't know what I'm talking about, but he teaches me things and doesn't even realize he's teaching them to me.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of things I've learned about myself, just about life in general. So
you are maybe receptive to your son actually teaching you some things. Back off, son. I don't want this.
I didn't ask you for any tips.
I've gotten better. I will say I've gotten better. So I'm a little more open now just because I realize that I can't be perfect. And I can't consider myself a great dad if I'm not also looking for different ways to grow in that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't have all the answers. My wife doesn't have all the answers, obviously. So I go based off of what I remember growing up, what I saw growing up, and then also what I saw growing up that I didn't want to repeat, which was also important to me as well. So my dad, like I said, he was in the house until I was 10, and we kind of had a rocky relationship due to him being an alcoholic.
Mm.
And he passed away 2 years ago.
Sorry.
Thank you. And, but one thing that I got out of that, is that it's okay to kind of step back even from a parent sometimes, just for your own mental space. Yeah. And that was another reason just to kind of go back. That was another reason and an important thing that, prompted me to start the podcast as well.
Yeah.
Nice. For the dads that didn't have a good dad example growing up, you kind of left to, ultimately you're figuring it out on your own anyway, but at least if you have a foundation, you know where to start.
Yeah.
And so there were good traits that he had that I remember that I implement now, but there were also some traits that I didn't totally agree with.
Right.
But what I will say is that prior to him passing, we had reconnected like maybe 2 months prior, because he had never met my son. My son was born, we weren't speaking. So he was able to meet my son. We were able to kind of reconnect and to heal that relationship, so to speak. And I think that was important for me. Also just helped me be a better dad, a better father. Cause I needed that closure for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that kind of, in a way it kind of molded me into a better father in that moment, even just dealing with that. And just, also, again, my son was young, so he didn't know that, but just if we ever have that conversation, he'll learn a lot about forgiveness, which is important.
Yes.
Because that's a hard thing for me to do, I'll be honest.
Yep.
I'm not a very forgiving person, especially when you've repeatedly done something, but just show him that, it's okay to step away, and if you feel like you want to go back into that, that's fine too. But just to be smart about it and just to, weigh your options.
Yeah.
I think you hit on, a big point in the idea of us all like with this expectation that we can be perfect parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not a reality. Like, and accepting that we're going to make mistakes and being able to move on from them and sharing them with other dads is huge.
Right.
Right. And getting that idea that, okay, we made a mistake. Let's learn from it. Let's move on. Let's do things better next time. I think that's awesome.
Living in the fire, sometimes you're going to get burnt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And so, I will say fatherhood has also just taught me to be kinder to myself. To allow myself to mess up and to know that it's okay. With most things, you get an option to do it again or start over. Or do it better the next time. So it's just a matter of learning from those mistakes and implementing different resources or, whatever that is to get a different outcome.
Yeah, being receptive to change, be it just from your own experiences or whatever it is, that's probably the most important thing overall is accepting that, sometimes they're going to be wrong, but hey, I'm going to try and be better. Next day, I'm going to try and be better. I'm just going to try and be better. That's the sports mentality. Yeah, that's exactly. The parent mentality, whatever it is, right? Like all we can do is try the best that we can. And sometimes maybe that's not good enough, but I'm going to learn from that and try better the next day or the next day.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah. So we've gone for about 40, 45 minutes here. I told you I'd try and keep it to that time. I certainly appreciate you taking the time to chat with Graham and I, and
thank you information. For having me.
Yeah. It's the Dad and Well Black podcast. It's awesome. Huge kudos to you for starting that and really promoting that in the community and getting, as you mentioned, a bit of a change in the way people perceive the Black Dad community. I think that's really admirable and a great thing to do. For those of you listening, all the information for the podcast is going to be in the show notes for this, as well as a link to the Dad and Well Black Instagram page. Make sure you guys go check it out. Please rate and review our podcast, The Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting. Thanks so much, everybody, for taking the time to listen. Thank you so much again, Alston, for joining us. Look forward to seeing you in the Dad Influencer group and chatting soon.
Absolutely. All right, I'll talk to you guys soon.